Brandon Hobson is with us now. He's a professor at New Mexico State and a neat writer. I've read one of his novels. And welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what you would tell somebody if we were riding on a train and I asked about your new novel, The Devil is a Southpaw, right? Mm-hmm. What would you, you know, if I said, so what was that about?
Well, how long do I have?
You have
I'm just kidding.
Close to a half hour.
Yeah, so...
But that'll include reading a little from it,
okay,
I hope.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm sort of joking, you know, because there's a lot. It's I wanted to write a kind of complex and difficult book, just sort of challenging the reader in some ways, because what the story is about... I think it's about many things, but the narrator is a man who is looking back on his childhood where he was locked up in juvenile incarceration with other young people in Oklahoma, one of whom has become kind of a successful artist and writer, painter, and he's very jealous of this. And so... part of the theme is exploring mental health, and as he's looking back, he's telling what he calls his novel, but then he later says it's his memoirs.
And he is an unreliable narrator.
Very, very much an unreliable narrator, yeah.
And you had experience with working with kids in those kind of facilities, right?
I did, yeah. 25 years ago, you know, I was working in Oklahoma in juvenile incarceration. I also did juvenile probation and a few different types of jobs in social work. And so that was part of, you know, there's a kind of a lingering trauma. I noticed that a lot of people who serve time sort of have to deal with. And that's part of, I think, Milton... part of his reason for telling this story is he's trying to unpack these questions of, why things have turned out the way they have, and from being locked up, how that's affected him.
Yeah. Can you explain the title of the book and what do you have against left-handers?
Thanks. It's the title, The Devil is a Southpaw, is based on a 1971 low-budget film starring John Wayne, which is, it's not a real film. It's fictional, of course. But in the film, as he did in many of his movies, were attacking natives. And so the film in the book, that the title comes, there's a couple of things here. One is... Matthew, the boy who has later become an artist, has had some success as a native. He's Cherokee, which there are many in Oklahoma. I happen to be one of them. And so Milton is not. And so the part of it is the attack on natives. And the other thing that Milton tells us is that Matthew's dad was a pitcher. For a left-handed pitcher, which is often called a southpaw, right? Mm-hmm. And tried out for the Cincinnati Reds in the 1970s and failed. And so it's another way of sort of attacking Matthew in this sort of very angry way. Yeah.
So we have a novel within a novel. We have people with mental issues. Mm-hmm. We have... a unreliable narrator, and I think there's even a character who receives the novel who's named B. Hobson or something like that. Mm-hmm. Was this novel fun to write?
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. I teach, and this is one of the things that I encourage students to really focus on in their writing, is finding the pleasure and finding the fun. And a lot of that, I think, we come to reading. Most of us come to, especially fiction, poetry, we come to reading out of this sort of pleasure that I think we all find when we're very young. And part of the writing process, I think, should, you know, it's writing is very difficult. And so many, especially right now, it feels like there's a lot of novels that are just really, really serious. And what, this is kind of a serious novel. It's also playful, and there's a lot of sort of intertextual nods to other people and sort of inside jokes. There's letters, poems, anagrams, those kinds of things. So I encourage students to really try to find this pleasure in writing. And often that really sort of motivates one, especially to finish. Because a lot of times, I think when people are writing, they have a lot of trouble finishing something, even just a short story. But especially a novel. I've worked with so many people on their novels, and they come away, they step away from it saying, I don't know how to finish this thing, and I'm just bored with it. I hate it. <You know? laughs> So that's part of it is, you know, this was incorporating a lot of what I love about reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the novels that you read at some point when you were younger that particularly resonated with you or taught you something or intrigued you?
Yeah, there's so many. Early on, I think in my 20s, when I was in college, I discovered a lot of these writers who were doing something different, like in the 90s. They were really taking postmodernism to a new level. And I was reading a lot of postmodern literature in the 90s, which is a movement that started actually back in the 50s and 1960s with Vladimir Nabokov, guys like Donald Barthelme, John Barth, and then later some women writers, Kathy Acker. And they were really pushing the boundaries of what you can do in terms of taking modernist another level, to another level, modernist literature. So I was reading a lot of experimental stuff early on that really, I think, motivated me to begin writing.
How would you tell a non-literary listener what modernist means?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's this.
Not everybody. Just myself included.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, going back to writers like James Joyce, right? And I guess the sort of easy answer here is to say they were interested in fracturing the texts in certain ways and challenging the reader, often creating chaos within the story more than just writing a linear timeline narrative.
Is it fair to say that maybe we've moved from a novel about what's going on out there to a novel about how I see what's going on?
Yes, these questions of what is real and what is not real is a big question, I think, for Milton in this novel is, you know, what is real for him and what is real or what is truth, right?
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly, right. So those are all really difficult questions, and one of the things I do want to say, because I realize I'm sounding probably very complicated, this type of story to challenge the reader is a way to engage the reader in a way that gather my thoughts here. It's a way that it lets the reader become a detective in a way.
Yeah.
I guess that's it's not just, it's more than just entertaining the reader. And I like, of course, I was an English major, so I like highlighting words and sentences and, you know, finding clues in fiction. And it becomes a way to engage as a reader. We're engaged. We're not just sort of sitting back like the way that maybe Netflix or movies we don't have to do any work other than, you know, just sort of watch and
well, I don't know. We were watching Dark Winds or The Diplomat, and we try to figure out what's going on before the characters do.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, but I guess.
Read us a little bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah, let me find a place here. Actually, I can just – how about I just start at –
Start at the start, if you want.
At the beginning.
Novel or memoir.
Yeah, I'll start at the beginning where Milton is writing in the first chapter here, which he titles The Tragic Death of Matthew Echota.
Former co-inmate that he kind of envies, right?
Yes. And in his novel, the first part of the book, by the way, I should say that Matthew escapes from the detention center and drowns, basically. And then he comes back later on. I'm not giving anything too much away here to sort of retell his story. And this is not the way things happened at all, actually. So in the spring of 1988, on a Sunday night in our last days at Tophet County Juvenile Correctional Facility, the dogs escaped out of the courtyard by chewing apart the bottom of the fence's rotted wood and then crawling underneath it. And at sunrise on Monday morning, when the alarm rang throughout the buildings, the guards discovered that Matthew had disappeared too. Only then were the rest of us allowed to search deep into the woods without using butcher knives to cut through the thick brush and twigs, as the drill sergeants had proposed, and without a thermos of water or fruit to keep us hydrated, as the cooks had suggested, because all we really needed was one another. The guards and staff and drill sergeants, who weren't concerned with finding the dogs, claimed they would call the police and began searching in the more open areas down the hill from the grounds, but they sent us, for whatever reason, into the dark woods. We weren't afraid of finding snakes or even murderers, not after all the physical labor and punishments we had endured over the past year. And going into the trees was like entering the thin, cool atmosphere of a land we had heard only from fairy tales read aloud to us, because the air was calm with a brooding tranquility, and the susurration and sighing of the trees gave us an immediate sense of repose, and certainly we were silent, not even clearing our throats or gasping in all our anxieties and fear as we trudged slowly through the boggy wet leaves, past dimbles, scrogs, and shrubbery, and into the slanted streams of morning sunlight.
Sounds good. Sorry. Dopey question. Yeah. Why didn't the alarm go off right away, or is it that no one was there?
Because
I think you have him saying that on Monday morning when the alarm went off.
Yeah. Part of that is the way to sort of set up the book was, you know, how can I have him escape without being caught immediately? And, you know, part of this is it's an exaggeration again from Milton, you know, saying that there's a failure in the system.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious. You said you know, a lot of writers get frustrated because they start a novel and don't know how to finish it. Mm-hmm. When you started this, did you know in your head where it was going to go and how it was going to end up?
No, not really. No.
So what is that journey like?
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. I think writing a novel, it's creating a work of art. Not all novels are art, right? Yeah, obviously,
right,
but part of it, I also paint and I draw a lot and, just for my own sort of therapeutic, benefit. But part of it is there's something that is very therapeutic about, for me, it's a project that I'm constantly, like woodworking or, someone who is.
Particularly in woodworking, you know step by step what you're going to do, where you're going to go, how it, this seems a lot more, less structured.
You know, part of the distinction is whether you're writing, if you're John Grisham, and I saw him say this in an interview, but I also know it from having written one, but if you're writing that kind of whodunit sort of thing, yes, you know how it's going to end, and you need to know, and you outline it in advance. But with other kind of projects like this sounds like, and, you know, it's a whole different thing where you could be coming out, getting up in the morning or right when, if you write in the evening, getting to the desk, and you don't know what's going to happen. It's a discovery process. Is that for you with this kind of book?
Yeah, often it is. Sometimes if I'm writing a story, I work backwards. Like I might see the end. I often tell students to end on an image. You know, what's an image? And then, so there might be an image, and then I try to work backwards. But someone like John Grisham, you know, that type of writer is someone I think probably one would not consider, you know, highly literary necessarily.
No, not at all.
But a very sort of, you know, very practical way of writing a novel, following a specific outline, which is certainly a fine way of writing a novel. Yeah.
I remember hearing Ross Marks talk about directing a film or writing a film. And he said, you know, at the 20-minute mark, this has to happen. And at the 40-minute mark, this has to happen.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, well, this is paint-by-number stuff. I mean, where is the freedom? Where is the creativity? Where is the – so it seems like you're kind of the exact opposite of that.
Probably so. I don't know much about. I know Ross.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I teach
right.
with him, and
I haven't thought about it until he said that. But it's true. Yeah. When you watch films, they all kind of follow the same.
Yeah, scripts. I think are probably easier to write than novels, and certainly you're under time constraint, right? So with 90 pages for a script or something would it's a very different. Way of writing.
It's also much more visual and dialogue, and not obviously not the language, which is a big part of what you're doing.
Yeah, the language here, and I think especially Milton, he's using an exaggerated vocabulary and writing as very long sentences, and
which is one of the hints that he's maybe not telling us the truth because he's trying to dress it up with.
Yes, it's the style is it's supposed to convey a kind of exaggeration. Gabriel Garcia Marquez sometimes did that in some of his work, and I think it's done probably a lot more in European literature probably than over here, but that also I do want to say an unreliable narrator, but Milton is also a bit of a trickster, and part of it because I'm interested in always having telling a different type of Native American story that he's a little bit of a trickster. The trickster narrative is someone often in Native literature who's a shapeshifter, often told through the lens of a coyote or a rabbit,
right,
for example, and their whole intent is to create chaos in order to challenge the reader or challenge the listener of the story, right?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, not always malevolent, sometimes benevolent, but the trickster.
Trickster very much, and even though he doesn't physically shapeshift in this novel, there is a kind of transformation at the end that he goes through when he's much like he resorts to solitude many years later, and kind of has this kind of spiritual awakening, and where he becomes much more reliable in the last part of the book.
Now, the first part of the novel, first part of the book is his novel or memoir.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then what's the rest of it?
The next part of the book is him sort of retelling the story. So he tells us at the beginning that the reason they got locked up was for an attempt at a school shooting. And then later he says that's not really what happened at all. It was something very different. And he sort of... in order to gain the reader's sympathy, that's part of the reason I think that everything was so exaggerated in the first part. Trying to gain the reader's, the empathy and to feel empathetic toward him. But the last part he kind of retells because he's had this sort of crisis, this mental health crisis, and comes back and says, this isn't really the way that that things happened at all. And this is, he kind of retells his childhood in what hopefully is a much more reliable, in his reality, though, right? Because there's all kinds of hallucinations also that he's sort of, you know, going through.
No, I look forward to reading it. haven't yet. One of the things you do, we've referred to, is to teach and, you know, sort of help the next generation come along. What are they showing you at this point? Are they challenging you? Are they making you feel old-fashioned yet?
No, I think that what I, one of the biggest things I try to do is introduce students to stuff that they haven't read before. That's the real joy is there's a lot of great stuff out there that I think a lot of, you know, most of my students were born now, like in what, 2000 or something. So, you know, they were raised on, you know, Harry Potter and these kind of more sort of vampire fantasy type stuff, which is, you know, certainly fine. But then, you know, there's a whole other level of stuff out there, that fiction that they may not have gotten introduced to in high school, that that I enjoy introducing them to. Yeah.
Are there writers that you, I won't say borrow from, but you look at their style and, because I'll say it myself, I borrow from people all the time.
Sure.
You'll see a clever turn of phrase and I'll stick, oh, there'll be a time in the future when I could use that. Or so are there writers that you look to that you particularly enjoy reading and that also you draw some inspiration from?
Yes, there were a few. Borges, the writer Borges is one, and he's a bit of a trickster, right? You know, as well with a lot of his work, but also Vladimir Nabokov, big influence on me when I was younger.
How about Cortazar?
Very difficult, but Hopscotch, that novel, certainly is another one that he employs a lot. What I'm trying to do with this novel. So there were a lot of the South American Marquez.
I'd recommend his short stories to people.
Yeah, much, much more accessible, right.
And Borges, by the way, let me jump right on that. That's one of my favorite writers right there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. And he's, you know, they're short stories and they'll open your mind. They'll expand your mind.
Yeah. And that's, you know, these are the people who influenced me early on, and you know, and it's difficult in publishing.
And Garcia Marquez.
Marquez, yeah. But it's difficult in publishing to be able to do in American publishing. It feels like more and more things are changing and. But I was also, David Foster Wallace was another influence early on for me. Kathy Acker, Diane Williams. These are maybe writers you haven't heard of, but I...
heard of, but haven't really read.
Haven't read much. Yeah, Lydia Davis on the sentence level also, yeah.
I remember, of course, well, I was reading Garcia Marquez in translation, but I was driving through Mexico and reading, and just the sentences, you know, even in the translation, the sentences and the images were blow-eyes.
Have you read Bolaño, Roberto Bolaño?
Yeah, with difficulty.
Yeah, his short stories are much more accessible, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I read something longer. But
he writes big books.
He's on my I should list. Should read list more than, oh, wow.
Yeah, read the story. The short stories are accessible, yeah.
What would you, dopey question, and, you know, only a short time to answer it, but if somebody's out there thinking that, you know, they would like to be writing, what would you say to them?
to someone just start.
Other than, by the way, I saw John Banville in an interview said he was asked that question by another writer who showed up with her students at college level, and he said, "Give it up." Because right. It's never going to make any money. It's going to, you're not going to make money. Yeah. You're going to be frustrated. People are going to make fun of you. Your family's going to be angry because you're not working.
Yeah.
Anyway, you have better advice, I'm sure.
Well, no, not much better than that. No. There's something to, not looking at as work and something that is, not fun. And, yeah.
Yeah, I work on a long project of fiction that I may never finish, but most every morning. And more recently, I've focused on the fun part of it.
Yeah.
I've remembered something Hemingway said where, it's neat to know what you're going to say first in the morning. So I sort of, the night before, get a sense of what my characters are going to want to talk about in the morning. But it's like, to me, it's like a girl playing with her dolls or something, or somebody having an imaginary friend, and it's fun.
Yeah, it is, and it often that's right. Like sitting down and already having an idea is if you just sit there and just sort of pulling on your bottom lip, staring at the screen, is not, you're not gonna. It becomes frustrating, right? Or you maybe often people who are blocked put too much pressure on themselves. Like, oh my gosh, who's going to read this?
Yes.
And putting too much pressure on yourself is a way that will cripple you. So, it's kind of like when I paint. A lot of times I just splatter paint all over the canvas and just do abstract stuff and play with it. And I think that's a good way of looking at fiction.
Yeah. My analogy is it's different now with film being on digital. Mm-hmm. But basically everybody starts writing and thinks, well, if this sentence isn't wonderful, I'm a failure. But if you think about it in terms of all the images you take with a digital camera, you're happy if a couple of out of 100 work.
Sure.
Anyway, yeah. We'll have you back again. We've been talking with Brandon Hobson about his new novel, The Devil Is a Southpaw, which I will start reading this week.